first today, we're taking a look at the Supreme Court. Last week saw the conclusion of another session of the nation's highest court with landmark rulings about religious freedom and cell phone privacy and recess appointments. But there was another decision, another 5-4 ruling that came out the same day as that big Hobby Lobby decision that may have an impact on unions and how they operate, including right here in Kansas City. The court's 5-4 decision is being characterized as a partial defeat for organized labor. And joining us to talk about the ruling is Craig Becker. He's general counsel of the AFL-CIO, the National Federation of Labor Unions. Craig, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you very much.
It's nice to have you here. I know the AFL-CIO has some serious concerns about the decision, but first let me ask you to help us understand it. The court's majority, in a decision written by Justice Samuel Alito, said that some government employees could not be compelled to pay agency fees, union dues. What employees are we talking about here?
The decision addressed a very specific category of public employees in Illinois. The employees at issue were paid by the state, paid an hourly wage, to take care of elderly and disabled individuals in their home, so often referred to as home care workers. So people who go into others' homes, bathe them, help them with their medications, do shopping for them, cook for them, whatever they need, and are paid by the state, although obviously don't work in a state workplace. They work in different people's homes every day. The state of Illinois, some years back, amended their public sector collective bargaining law, which allows all state employees and local employees, teachers, clerks, etc., to engage in collective bargaining with the state if they so desire. So the state amended its law to cover this category of workers and to provide what's typical of those collective bargaining laws, that the principle of majority rule governs. So if a majority of workers in a particular category wish to be represented, then all the workers are represented, whether they're members of the union or not. And the union actually has a legal duty to fairly represent all those workers, whether they're union members or not. And the law in Illinois, as in most other states which have comprehensive collective bargaining laws, allows the union to spread the cost of that representation and only that representation, so not, for example, political contributions, across all those individuals who are represented. And what the court said is, as to this category, that's an impermissible infringement on the non-members' freedom of association.
So not all unions, not all employees, but a specific subset seem to be affected by this decision. Who's in and who's out?
Well, that's a very good question, which we won't know until we get the next case. But what the court said is the principle which allows the collection of what we commonly refer to as fair share fees, that principle was upheld by the Supreme Court in a case in the 1970s called Abood versus Detroit Board of Education. And what the court said is, while that decision may still be good law as to full public employees, not so for these employees who the court characterized as partial public employees, because although the state pays their wage and sets their wage and provides other benefits such as health insurance, it doesn't fully hire and fire. That is, the consumers under the particular statute through which these services are provided, the consumers are allowed to actually choose their provider and terminate their provider, which obviously makes good sense as a matter of public policy given the intimate nature of the services at issue. So the court said these are not full public employees, these are only partial public employees, and therefore our prior decision in Abood doesn't govern.
So
whether that would apply in other contexts, that's a question we'll have to wait and see the answer to.
Well, and I imagine that's a question that you're spending some time thinking about these days, right?
Yes.
Obviously, there are service unions with chapters in every place in the country, including Kansas and Missouri here in our listening area. Are there any groups that you sense are particularly vulnerable in the eyes of the AFL-CIO going forward now?
Well, there's two immediate groups that I think are potentially affected here. One is the statute that Illinois passed allowing collective bargaining by this group of home care workers does have parallels in other states. California, Washington, Oregon, Connecticut, a number of states have adopted parallel statutes. So the group most likely affected would be those home care workers in other states where state law permits collective bargaining. There are then other categories of workers who have also been permitted to engage in collective bargaining who have similar, what we typically call joint employment relationships. The court didn't use that term, but there's actually a very common notion in labor and employment law that a person can have more than one employer. Manpower, the agency, sends temporary workers into another employer to perform services. One employer sets the wages and the other supervisors. They're both considered employers. So that relationship is not at all atypical, and there's other categories of workers who may provide services for the public where the consumers may exercise certain control over them, and they would also potentially be affected by the decision.
Yeah, let me ask you to put on your hat as a lawyer for organized labor. The opening summary that Justice Alito gives of his opinion says this case presents the question whether the First Amendment permits a state to compel personal care providers to subsidize speech on matters of public concern by a union that they do not wish to join or support, and we hold that it does not. That seems eminently reasonable in the plain language that it's written in. Why would the AFL-CIO have a problem with that?
Well, for two reasons. One, there's a compulsion on both sides. And so if you read the dissent, I think there'd be an equally compelling, and we would submit more compelling, opening of the dissent. And the compulsion on the other side is that the union is required by law to provide services to those non-members. And that's not only in terms of the wage rate. So the union here has negotiated, since it's been the representative, very significant wage increases for these workers who at one time were very poorly paid, as well as health and safety protections, as well as health insurance. And those are not only for members. That is, members and non-members have benefited from those negotiated improvements. So the union has a legal duty not only to represent the non-members in collective bargaining, but let's say a non-member doesn't get paid or believes that he or she worked more hours than they were paid for. The union has a legal obligation to assist that person, even if they're not a member. So the state is requiring the union to provide services to everybody in the unit as part of the system of collective bargaining. That's the way it works, majority rule. And the court has long held that in return, it can spread the cost of those services across all the people who are benefiting.
Well, you mentioned the dissent. The court did split along its customary conservative liberal line. Justice Kagan wrote this dissent. She was joined by Justices Breyer and Ginsburg and Sotomayor. Justice Kagan wrote that the court couldn't help taking pot shots at that 1977 case you mentioned, the Abood case. And your president, the president of the AFL-CIO, in his statement made a similar reference. There seems like there are a lot of folks who are worried about the implications of this case for the next case down the road. Do you think the 1977 decision, the one that really created the framework for these spreading of costs among all union members, do you think that's in jeopardy?
Well, I'd say two things. One is that decision has been reaffirmed numerous times since the 1970s, including by members of the majority, including Justice Scalia and others, who have applied that principle. And they've applied it, interestingly, not only in the union context. So, for example, I'm a member of the bar, and in most states, all members of the bar are charged a fee to support the activities of the Bar Association, that it's so-called integrated bar. And those rules have also been challenged under the First Amendment, and the court has upheld them under exactly the same logic as it's upheld the so-called fair share fees. So there are other instances under which the government says, we want services to be provided by a group, whether that be lawyers or home care workers or teachers, and we're going to require that those services be provided to everybody in that group, and everybody can be charged for those services.
So you would not agree with a statement that came out after the decision from the Illinois Policy Institute, which, of course, stood on the opposite side in this case from the AFL-CIO. They had a brief before the court. They said in their statement that the Supreme Court, in taking this decision, is putting more limits on mandatory union dues, and soon the High Court may rightly decide that forced dues are unconstitutional and do away with them entirely. You're not worried about that?
I wouldn't say I'm not worried about it. I think that if the law is fairly applied and the court gives proper deference to its own precedent, that would be a very hard outcome to reach because you have literally decades of case law, not only in the union context, which relies on a set of principles which would be unsettled if the court were to overrule Abood. It would threaten the way lawyers are governed in most states. It would threaten other government programs. And it would be a very radical departure from precedent.
So, Craig, what's next? Are there you mentioned that we have to wait for other cases to determine the limits of this decision. Are there other cases in the pipeline that the AFL-CIO is keeping an eye on? Are you seeking to address this on a legislative basis? What should we be looking for next?
Well, there are certainly other cases in the pipeline, and there will be more. The court is certainly, the court majority is certainly encouraged further challenge to the principles enunciated in Abood, and there are already certain cases pending. We can expect, I think, challenges to the home care statutes in the states where they exist, and I think you can expect a direct challenge to Abood. So we are going to watch all of those very carefully, of course.
That's Craig Becker. He's general counsel of the AFL-CIO. He joined us from his office in Washington, where he works there for the National Federation of Labor Unions. Craig Becker, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.